turn it took me to the far right, back to the far left. So I could read the minds of Westboro Baptist Church. Because I've been there. Not and, literally, but...
And it's great that you've taken that journey because you now can see the situation from both sides.
Yes.
So good evening. Welcome back to... Welcome to the fourth episode of Zine. We are joined here by the one and only Mr. Bong Manayon. So stay tuned. We'll come back for more. And welcome back to Zine. This is the fourth episode, and we are joined by one of the most wonderful photographers I know. He is a professor of photography at the College of St. Benil de La Salle. He has been through quite a journey through faith and art. And we are joined here tonight by no other than Mr. Bong Manayon. Thank you so much, Sir Bong, for gracing this episode. How has this week been to you?
Oh, yeah, that question. I've been staying away from social media and looking outside my window because it's a scary world out there.
And that's good for your mental health. Well, would you call this to be fair, I think that's one of the good things about mental health, self-care. You stay away from bad internet.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true. Mm-mm. I mean, you're half torn because you're supposed to be aware of what's going on, but at the same time, it drives you crazy.
I know. Now, to our dear listeners, if you noticed last episode, we did a quick book review on Standard Deviations, and that's his latest baby, and what a treat it is to have him here with us. So, let's get into it, sir. So, you mentioned earlier that you're a freelancer.
Yes.
And what a journey it's been. So can you please guide us through this journey that's led you to becoming the freelance photographer that you are today?
Yeah, I started out...
To start off, to help you out, you mentioned earlier about how your experience has led you from going from swinging to the right to the left.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Maybe we can start with that.
So the crucial thing in my experience was when my daughter was diagnosed as autistic.
Mm-hmm.
And given the culture I was working at, I needed more money. I mean, you're basically raising an autistic child is like sending somebody to med school without graduating ever. So I realized that I wasn't going to be earning that money where I was. And I had options, but it was against my religion to earn money off God.
Okay, yeah. Can you tell us more about this?
Well, simply said, I mean, religion is a lucrative business. You could earn big bucks.
Right.
Start your own church and you can get filthy rich.
Mm-hmm. And did this mean that you were in a seminary at the time?
Yeah, I was. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I was in a seminary. I mean, after the experience of... The late early 80s.
Uh-huh.
Early 80s, what happened, that was Martial Law in its darkness.
Right.
Uh-huh. That was Russia invading Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. That was Ronald Reagan threatening Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point in time, hey, it's the end of the world.
Okay.
So, I mean, any future plans, it's sort of not going to happen. We're gonna die in a nuclear holocaust. So as far as I was concerned, was given my where I was spiritually, religiously, I decided maging maka Diyos, maka bayan, and die for your country, change the world, and spread the gospel and so on. And then entered seminary. What did I do in seminary? Well, the most obvious was I thought I was going to be a preacher, but I didn't. I became a teacher instead, teaching in a seminary for 20 years.
Opo.
Why? Because I enjoy the intellectual freedom. What I realized that if I became a pastor, I would be indoctrinating people, not educating them.
Yeah.
Two very different ideas, after all.
Right. So I was doing that, and I was in a context of an urban poor community, urban poor churches. And then the brick wall hit me, which was my daughter being diagnosed as autistic.
Mm-hmm. On the spectrum.
Yeah. So I decided that I needed to earn money honestly and not start a scam.
Okay. All right. It's your principle, eh?
Yes.
Yeah. So, sir, what do you call this? This is a very different story that we're getting, and it's very fascinating because most people in my generation have had the experience of, I'm leaving corporate behind, I'm done selling my soul to the powers that be, and I'm going to follow my heart, and I'm going to go and forge my own path, which is all very noble. I was part of that. Though, what do you call this, and that does not make it any less true or any less
valid.
Thank you, baby. Mm-hmm. Although your story is very different, because here you are, the decision, it seems to me that the decision was informed by your principles. It almost feels very Thomas More.
Mm.
Almost. Yun. I hope I do not offend.
No.
Okay. So, with that said, sir, maybe earlier you had a very interesting question regarding freelancing.
Well, not freelancing back then. Has it changed over the years compared to freelancing now?
Yeah.
Was there a big difference? What were the challenges? What were the opportunities then that no longer exist now? What challenges and what opportunities exist now that did not exist back then?
Well, as a photographer, I got drowned or swallowed up in that culture na porket may DSLR ka na, photographer ka na.
Yeah.
Was this like back when you were starting out or nowadays?
I think the crucial year was about 2007, 2006. That was the time that DSLRs became accessible to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that, a freelancer was just another professional.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He may not be working under a studio or an organization, but he still gets the same respect and he earns the same amount of money.
Right.
But because of that, the flood of DSLRs and everybody wanting to become freelancers, some people were undercutting in the business.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know what the rates are now. I stopped shooting weddings for the past 5 years or more. But I remember back then you had people offering something like 5,000 for a full wedding coverage.
Ooh, yikes.
Yikes.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, given how Filipinos are cheap.
Yeah. And I think that's the undercutting practice is a big problem, not just in photography, but also in other creative fields. And that, in a sense, is I'm also seeing this is probably why there have been posts online in freelance groups na know your worth, because what you call this, and please, what you call this, do not undercut, because if you undercut, you affect you affect everyone, all of us. You know, we have to be in this and protect each other.
The tragedy of the phenomena you're describing now is that those who undercut, I suspect, are basically dilettantes. You know, there are people saying, oh, I can afford this high-tech device, it makes my work look good, so I will just offer my services for cheap.
Or worse, love, the what I noticed then is the people who undercut are those who are desperate. I need this money to survive, so I'll just give it na ganito lang.
Yeah.
Or on the other hand, there are the ones who are comfortably wired off, that they're just dabbling it for fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll just offer it to friends and family and say, well, you don't have to hire a professional photographer. I can do it for peanuts, for beer money, or even for nothing. Just let me use the camera I paid for.
Yeah.
So what happens? So you're telling me, love, that what happens is, nahahawa na yung iba, and your clients expect na, oh, this photographer offered it to me for this cheap. So why are you why are you asking?
I've witnessed both. I mean, I've encountered groups that beer money.
Yeah.
And of course, I've also seen desperate freelancers just doing everything they can to make ends meet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it does damage the whole industry. Of course, there's this whole thing about the whole culture of how Filipinos think about art.
Yeah. The let's explore that a bit, because that's a reflection on the culture and may actually give us a clue as to the extent of the damage that our culture has sustained because of our history.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about the Filipino attitude toward art and creativity in general?
Well, I grew up in a generation that I was supposed to be an engineer. And that point in time where a decent career is either an engineer, a doctor, a lawyer, and you have to be really weird to be an artist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you still have to be weird to be an artist, but in another sense.
it's a craziness that's beyond the level of just being crazy to make art, but it's also being crazy enough to go against what the set path for you is, right. I think.
So I think already there, I mean, there's this some sense of recognition that you're not going to earn money off that. You're not going to, it's not a career. Of course, something changed down the line. I mean, you have now art schools, but then again, as far as, I guess, from family, society is concerned, I mean, it's not something that as respectable than, you don't have titles, you don't have doctor, attorney, or those formal titles,
right.
Tags that you associate with artists.
Right.
Well, in the Renaissance, they were called masters.
Exactly.
But we don't call that, we don't call artists masters in our country.
Mm-hmm.
In our day, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Unless they're conferred with a national artist, you know. And
but that doesn't guarantee rich and famous.
Nowadays, even that title has come under question because of certain appointments.
Because it has been politicized.
Exactly.
Yes.
And again, that only goes to show how art and creativity are viewed by society at large.
Mm-hmm. Those are earlier. I also want us to go into your art, because with all the experiences you've had, your orientation, the theology you've gone through, I really loved earlier what you shared with us about liberation theology,
okay,
and how your experiences have informed your art.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell us? Can you give us like a taste? Can you give us a an appetizer, an amuse-bouche of how your psychology or how your experience informs your art.
I'm trying to remember what I said earlier.
Like when do you think this all started?
Well, okay. First of all, I mean, when I was freelancing, I was just your neighborhood next door wedding photographer.
Uh-huh.
I never really wanted the title artist. I don't think I deserve the title artist. But I've been dabbling in photography since I was a kid. Built my own darkroom when I was third year high school.
Wow.
And shot my first wedding, got published second year college. Of course, in the middle of that, I mean, I got this thing about clouds. My dad hated it because I would spend rolls and rolls of film taking pictures of nothing but clouds.
Mm.
Film was expensive, so that was, you could imagine what my dad face palming all the time about, what the hell are you taking a picture of? But then, as I learned the techniques and I got my photography right, the thing I did wanted to achieve was a form of realism, a form of reality that all my pictures captures reality as much as it can. And as a Protestant, this is my father's world.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was the hymn or creed that I was adhering to, where it's not what I see, but what is really out there. I mean, the way how things God sees the world. Not as if we know how God thinks, how God sees the world. But I just sort of assume or think that what is out there, reality, should be captured as is and not be filtered. Yes, I don't have an Instagram account. And I don't use filters on my photos.
Thank you very much, sir. Well, you know what? There's so much more that we can dig into. Stay tuned. And we are back. Thank you very much, dear listeners. And we are back for the fourth episode of Zine. And we are joined by Mr. Bong Manayon. So, Sir Bong, thank you so much. Earlier, you told us, you shared with us your thoughts on... Actually, you mentioned how your psychology and how your orientation has informed your art. So, can you please tell us more about this?
Okay. I mean, well, I guess when we're talking about... First of all, let's just talk about art plainly.
Mm-hmm.
I am a Protestant, and one of the greatest, I would say, creeds, but it's actually a hymn. This is my Father's world, and I do my best to see things as my Father's world. So I am more of the Renaissance type artist, where I want to capture reality as much as close to reality. Now I could talk about Van Gogh. But save that for another time. But
sir, kung ganyan, may part 2 tayo, ah.
Yeah. But see, the thing about it is I'm biased against abstracts and impressionism, because from what I just said, this is my Father's world. I mean, I like to see things from God's point of view, not from my impression or from my own set of eyes. Of course, that's relatively speaking, because how in heaven do I know how God sees things in the first place?
How do you translate that from the lens?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So it affects the way I take pictures in a way that things should look like as much as close to reality as it could get. So apart from standard deviation, well, there's this part in standard deviation where
the book,
uh-huh. Where I capture the window shots, those are reality shots.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, I mean, you're looking at a human figure in front of a window.
Right.
And maybe you're dazzled by the light through the window, but it's as close as reality as it could get. In short, if I was on Instagram or other things, and I'm not, I wouldn't use filters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, okay, photographically there are filters that are useful for something, but not the social media type filters. So that directly affects on how I would like to see or portray my photography. So check my Flickr account; you could see that everything looks clean, neat, and no filters or no dust and scratches or anything like light leaks or anything of that sort. Now, on the other hand, being a Protestant meant that in theory anyway, we are supposed to be more sexually progressive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In theory.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't have the Augustinian hang-up that... That sex is supposed to be this bad thing.
And only used for making babies.
Making babies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in theory. What I guess in other countries, it's more real. But back here, we sort of regress into becoming Filipinos again.
We regress into becoming Filipinos again.
Which is basically this Catholic thing about how we're not supposed to say anything about sex.
Oh, okay.
Societal pressure is overwhelming.
Yeah. In short, I mean, many for whatever reason convert to becoming born again Protestants and not Catholic, but they take with them that Augustinian acts.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not surprising, since the Augustinians figured prominently in our history.
Exactly.
Yes, yes.
So in my case, I've been a little bit confused because I was telling Adrian here about the upbringing I have, and it's a liberal family.
Mm-hmm.
We were sexually transparent. I mean, we shared bathrooms, we walked around half naked in the house, and whether it's my sister or my mother, and nobody was hiding anything from mm-hmm. anybody. I thought that was reality until later on in life, and I found out that you just don't do that everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. In that case, sir, what you call this? May I also? I'd like to also bring us back to your photography.
Yes.
Because what I really loved, I thank you so much for having us here. Because I also finally get a glimpse into the other types of photography you do aside from what you showed me is a standard deviation. Yes. You know, of course, that was absolutely lovely, and I would also want to zone in on your thoughts there, yeah. your process there, why. But for your other still lifes and your other photography, there's a very real sense of space. I love how reverent you are with space. You treat it with care. You treat it with such. You treat space as if it's something sacred, not sacrosanct, because there is a difference between sacred and sacrosanct. You know, there is something sublime about your use of space. Mm.
This would be a good point to mention Gestalt.
Yes,
because that is a series of photographs that talk about shapes and space.
And in particular, shapes and space in the context of architecture. Is that correct, yes. sir? Okay. Okay, can you tell us more about that? Which I mean, one? I hope I got the right message with seeing your photography.
Right.
Then, can you please tell us more about Gestalt?
Well, Gestalt is another book. It was actually a trial book and see how my photos would actually look like in a coffee table book.
Mm-hmm.
Series of black and whites. And you have to go to my it's actually for sale but not locally. Not sure if you noticed the cover of it.
Yeah,
the title is reverse.
Yeah. Right, right.
I mean, Gestalt is a German word for shapes, and it has meaning in the psychological community because it's supposed to be a way of seeing things. And the quote that's associated with Gestalt psychology is the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. So you can't really define, say, a person by just simply having two eyes, two ears, nose, and all that.
Right.
Because
right.
even if you collect all those parts of a human being, you still don't have a person.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a soul and everything else that makes a person a person.
Right.
So, in short, the whole is still greater than the sum of its parts. Except in the Philippines, because you could never see the whole cleanly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe go to BGC, that's as good as it could get.
Yeah.
But I walk around, it's this nice building, and you get this spaghetti of cables strung across it.
It's the chaos of Filipino life intruding, quote unquote, on the scene.
Yeah.
But then it's part and parcel of it. Eh?
Right. So I began to take pictures of buildings and usually with a telephoto lens, where I only get a part of it and never the whole, because the whole sucks.
Yeah.
And
I think there's a term in literature, synecdoche, where the part represents the whole.
Yeah, but I'm not sure if that's the word, but yes, there's a word for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
But that explains why the title is in reverse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
I wanted to call it reverse Gestalt. Because nobody would recognize that other word. I can't even remember what it was.
Mm.
But everybody knows what Gestalt is. So at least most of the psychologists would. Mm.
Right.
But I wanted to title the book Reverse Gestalt. But that's meh. So I flipped the word around.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's how I, because that's, I like to see reality as beautiful.
Yes.
I mean, I don't, not through filters and so on, like I said earlier.
And when we focus, when we go to your book, Hapid, 1981?
Hapid, 1981.
Thank you, I'm so sorry. Hapid, 1981.
Yes.
There is a tenderness in the way you look at your subjects and the story and the narrative you tell through the photos and through the stories that your experience there with this little girl, Candice, and her family and her environment, and even your relationship with the environment mm-hmm. in general, and how that has changed you in some way. There is a tenderness, there is even an awe. There is there is a reverent awe for everything. And I think that's also what I see in Standard Deviation. There's a bit of that, despite it being very critical
mm-hmm.
of the topics that you discuss in yes. it.
Well, it goes back to, this is my father's world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, okay, take it out of Christianity, take it out of Protestantism, take it into simple spirituality, that this world is not ours, we're just caregivers, caretakers.
That's lovely, sir. Let's take a quick pause. This is Still Zine. Stay tuned. And we are back. This is Zine, and we are joined today by Sir Bong Manayon, the one and only author of the coffee table book, Standard Deviation. So let's zero in on that book. So, Sir Bong, thank you very much for that wonderful copy of Standard Deviation. It was absolutely gorgeous. It was sublime. Can you please share with us what was your creative process for this book? What brought you to creating this book and discussing the topics within?
The art, well, first of all, it was psychology that was running around my mind when I started
mm-hmm.
this.
Mm-hmm.
The whole topic of Filipino sexuality and...
Did you have an inspiration for it?
Not really.
Okay.
I mean, it was... I'm not sure. It's hard to tell because I'm not... Like I said, I'm not the type of who's gonna... exhaustively find out if somebody else did it.
Uh-huh.
Maybe someone has, but there's this story in psychology that we like to pass around. And the story goes, there's this couple who went for counseling, and they went to their shrink, and their shrink showed them an ink blot. The woman stands up, screams, "Why the hell are you showing us these dirty pictures?" and hits the psychiatrist with her purse.
Uh-huh.
And you know that purses can be weaponized. And she storms out of the office. The psychiatrist, after he recovers from the shock, sees the husband or the man sitting there quivering, and said to him, and then the man said to him, "Doc, can I borrow your dirty pictures?"
Okay.
They were just ink blots. So that's a running joke that was sort of running in my head. And what if I made it a little more obvious? So this whole idea of superimposing ink blots on a nude body
mm-hmm.
Took me a while to get to it because, first of all, I haven't... Shooting nude is not my usual thing. I mean, there were workshops and so on, and I joined other photographers shooting nude, but it's not my thing. It's not the normal thing I would run after. So I had to find, I have to relearn it. I have to learn to do it. So I actually attended more workshops and more shot and sought out more occasions to practice shooting nude and what's in involved. And, once that I got that done, I guess I'm ready to shoot execute my idea. And the first brick wall I ran into, oh shit, I couldn't tell if the Rorschach ink blot test is still copyrighted.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to just scan that and project it and get sued for copyright infringement.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of confusing because I mean, there's this 50-year rule that after 50 years... But somebody sort of, I guess the Rorschach people in Switzerland wanted to protect it. So it's basically copyrighted in EU in the EU, but in the US it's not. Mm-hmm. It's public domain. Mm-hmm. Okay, I don't want to get into that, so I made my own inkblots.
Smart.
Just walked over across the street to National Bookstore, bought myself Oslo paper, and okay, let's use watercolor instead of ink, so it'll be more colorful.
Yeah.
And just basically threw watercolor and folded it into the Oslo paper. Mm-hmm. So those patterns were totally random.
And they're absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, it's so random. I can't imagine how it would look like, I mean, when you blotted them. Mm-hmm. So now, I scanned them. And my idea was that the human image, the human figure, will be in the negative. I mean, I'll explain later why, but mm-hmm. the idea behind. But to do that, I had to make the ink blots negative.
Right.
So Photoshop inverted the image and they became a negative image. And that's what I projected onto to Emma. Mm-hmm. Now, the creative process here was Emma is, I've already experienced that she can basically, in the window series, she was basically just posing on her own and I was just sort of catching her do her thing.
Right.
Of course, here you have, her posing is limited because it must follow the symmetry of the inkblot. Mm-hmm. So she takes one look at the inkblot and then, okay, this is how I will pose in front of it.
Mm, so she was part of the creative process as well.
I did not know how she will pose.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I just showed her I projected on the wall. That's how it looks like. Okay, I will do this. I will do that. Okay. And whatever else I did afterwards was to align the... Mm. Because, I mean, I should stand there, but the projection might be off by a bit and I sort of align the projector.
I think I've made a grave error here because all this time, and I really apologize, all this time I thought that you were directing her. Yun pala, Emma was contributing.
Yes, that's why she's a co-author in that sense.
I have wronged. but thank you for enlightening me.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can't really predict what Emma would do. Mm. I mean, to a certain degree, I could read her mind. Okay, this is what she'll do because it looks that way.
Right.
But as far as if she will actually do it, it's a totally different thing.
Right, right.
So, then after I took a photo of her, you know, I mean, some people, you know, but it would have been a whole lot easier if you just Photoshop those two figures together. That's not fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not fun.
And there's no real craft for photography.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It's part of the adventure.
Yeah. Mm. So, in which case, Emma would have nothing to do with it because she would have just posed there and then I would just superimpose in Photoshop there.
In a sense, it's also a sort of game.
Yes.
It's solving a puzzle.
Yeah.
So that done, I take the picture, a digital image, and this time I reverse it again. Mm-hmm. So the ink blot goes back to its original color, but you have a negative human image. That's why. I like to annoy you. I like to annoy the guys. You know, you stare at it long enough and then blink fast and you'll get nightmares. Or wet dreams, whatever.
Yeah. What I love about it, because it's like what I mentioned in the previous podcast, is how playful, what a wonderful playful approach it was to color and shape and form. Mm-hmm. You know, so sobra.
Yeah, I remember you mentioned something how the certain patterns matches with her
body parts. It quite literally it enrobes her, it girdles her body, mm-hmm. you know, unveils her in so many ways. Yeah. So
the randomness of the ink blots and how Emma responded to it contributed a lot.
That's wonderful. And I'd like to think of it as it's not just a way of pulling in minds, although yes, it's part of it, but it just makes it more, it just makes it so much richer. Mm-hmm. You know, so wow. Well, in that case, sir, may I also ask you, yes, sir. My question.
Are you going to ask me about how the photo matches the text?
Go ahead, please. Please. What was your process for that?
That is serendipity. Because when I was layouting the book, so I got the text in, and I'm confused. I'm not sure which one is right mind, left mind, because I basically put the text.
Because I do remember you put the images on the left and yes. The text on the right.
Now here's the happy accident there.
Right.
So when using in the software mm-hmm. where I was layouting the book, I basically was dragging one photo to a page. Mm-hmm. That was my plan. What I did not know was, I selected all. And when I dragged it, they all plopped, landed in its page. Just oops. I mean, sure, it was random. Mm-hmm. Computer randomness. Mm-hmm. And then, gosh, now I was thinking, I have to sort of mix and match. But I was looking, wait, they go together.
Yeah.
They go together.
Serendipity.
They go together. Okay, leave it as is.
Galing, sir, galing.
That was serendipity. I mean, I didn't plan it that way.
And that in itself is a form of inspiration.
Yeah.
Recognition.
Yes. Sir, may I ask you, what's the next big thing for you? What's the next big project that's exciting you right now?
I have a comic book.
Okay, tell us more about it.
Well, probably not
okay, now. just what you're comfortable sharing.
Yeah, let's just say, okay, I mean, I've got a friend of mine that said, I mean, at first I was throwing out some students who I knew drew cartoons, mm-hmm. comics, and I said, can you show me some of your work? And finally I narrowed out to one person, and I said, I have this idea for a comic book, and let's sit down and talk about it. And because she's young enough, and you might say much of a blank page at this point, that she has no style to
this
and stuff. So I could basically influence her in how I want my images to look
like direct her.
Yeah.
Or mold.
Yeah. Mold her.
Yeah.
And but of course at the same time she has her own way of doing things, so on. Now what I basically told her was, I told her, this is the story, this is the concept, this is the idea, and so on. Do you like it? I like it. Would you be willing to get crucified for it? Two major religions chasing you down because of
uh-huh.
that cartoon.
Uh-huh. That's a question of conviction, right?
Yes.
There.
I mean, if you're willing to do it, game. But otherwise, I walk away.
Okay. Yeah.
I won't judge you.
Yeah, no problem. No love lost.
But that's basically the essence of this comic book. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know how those cartoonists in Europe that draws the Muhammad and they get a fatwa for something like that? Maybe not that bad, but close.
Okay, well, we are looking forward to this, sir.
On the other hand, isn't art always transgressive in nature? Otherwise, it becomes kitsch or propaganda.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. I'm so sorry. I forgot who said this, but art should disturb the comfortable and comfort the disturbed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I almost know who said that. I'll look him up.
Mm-hmm. As always, Google is your friend, friends.
Yeah.
Okay, now may I also ask, sir, almost closing words, for you as a photographer, with your experience, with your wisdom, with this rich tapestry that you have behind you, what do you wish younger photographers nowadays knew or understood of the craft or of the experience of being a photographer? What do you wish you could impart to them?
I would echo Sebastian Salgado. He is a Latin American photographer. And basically what he says, learn psychology, learn economics, learn society, learn politics, learn your world. so you know what you're taking a picture of.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. There are words to live by. And where may we find your coffee table books, please? Let's know. If I'm pretty sure a good number of our readers, listeners out there, would want to get a hold of your coffee table books. Where will they? Where can they find you?
Right now, you can only get it from me. I'm hoping to. It is printed by Central Books. So Central Books, you have the main office here in Quezon Avenue near Fisher Mall.
Mm-hmm.
They have a kiosk. I mean, they have a store up in the fifth level of SM Mega Mall, and I don't know where else because I don't go. It's not a common bookstore, but they're the one publishing it. And as soon as give them a go, they will actually start publishing it soon.
Fantastic. And just in case, do you think they'll be able, is it all right for them to get in touch with you directly? Or
really, yeah.
How can they do that, sir?
They could help me down my Facebook page.
Okay, which is?
It simply says Bong Manayan Photography.
Fantastic. Okay, so that's at Bong Manayan Photography. All right.
Is that what it looks like? I never cared for tags.
Well, we'll include that in the description.
Okay.
This has been a treat. Do you have any, what do you call this, pahimakas to our listeners?
There was a promise for a part two.
Yes, there is a promise
for
a part two.
We'll work on that. Wait for part two.
All right.
We're not sure what it is, but wait for part two.
Which is going to be just as fun. So, Sir Bong Manayan, thank you so much for gracing this episode. It's been fantastic.
I'm smiling.
So thank you so much, listeners, for joining me tonight. This is Jeanette Valenciano for the fourth episode. This is Zine. Good night.